I was introduced to Vipassana practice in Southeast Asia, first in Thailand, and then a bit in Nepal, and then in Burma quite a bit. And then I came back to the United States and began participating in the Vipassana practice that was taught here by Western teachers. And one of the differences was that Western teachers, when they taught retreats, would have this systematic way in the first days of the retreat of laying out the instructions, much like how I've done it this week so far. They would begin the first day with mindfulness of breathing, second day mindfulness of the body, the third day mindfulness of emotions, and the fourth day mindfulness of thinking, like today. And then maybe a little bit more days of something. And at some point, the instructions were to bring all those together into a seamless whole. And it turned out that these instructions in the beginning were kind of like learning the alphabet. Once you learn the alphabet, then you can put them together into words and sentences and communicate and say to people, write to people, you know, I love you, or I apologize, or I forgive you. All kinds of profound things we can say, we can write, once we know how to put those words together, those letters together. So in Asia, though, it wasn't laid out in this kind of step-by-step way. You would go to the monastery, and you were given the instructions in relatively quickly, maybe 15, 20 minutes. And the basic idea was you sit down and you're present for whatever is the most dominant, predominant experience of the moment. And if there was nothing that was particularly predominant, more predominant than the breathing, then you would focus on the breathing. And that was the default. That was the anchor to the present moment that keep you tethered to the present. Just stay with the breath, stay with the breath. But the idea was not to hold everything else at bay, but rather, if something else arose that was predominant, meaning it was kind of compelling and it got your attention, then the instruction was actually to let go of the breath and bring your attention to this new experience. So if it was a compelling experience in the body, your knees hurt, for example, or a pleasant sensation arose, then you would let go of the breathing and you would take your mindful awareness and offer it to be present for this new experience. And just take that in. If it was an emotion, the same thing. If it's thinking, the same thing. And no matter what it was, you would just bring that attention to it. When I was a relatively new Zen student, I had this koan, this question that I was very curious about. I don't think I was perplexed exactly, but I didn't really have an answer, but it was, maybe I didn't need an answer. It was kind of like enlivening to have this question, but it felt like there was something really true here in this question. And then I asked one of my teachers, I think it was this way, I said, you know, it's easy to see that how everything is different. The rug in this room is different than the wall, is different than the ceiling and the lamps that are here. Each of these are different things. But how are they all the same, was my question. And I never, you know, I never try too hard to actively think about it, you know, logically, how they're all the same. I believe what was happening was that the sameness of them all was somehow associated with how I was aware of them. That I was aware of everything with a certain kind of equanimity or openness or respect for each thing. Each thing deserved its own respect for me. And so in this idea of where I was in this Vipassana practice, when you know the alphabet and you put it all together, then it becomes a seamless whole. And there's no part of human life, human experience, which is considered to be outside the domain of the practice. So no matter what we're experiencing, it is included. Yet this too is for my presence, for my mindfulness. And so what I valued so much about the instructions of Vipassana was the clear instructions around doing that with things that, like emotions, and doing it for thinking. These are things I mostly ignored when I was practicing Zen, and sometimes to my detriment, because there was all these emotions that I had that I wasn't really aware of and didn't really know to pay attention to them. But in this seamless whole that I learned, where everything is allowed to be included, and there's an element of respect that goes into this this touching awareness, touching the experience with awareness, really taking it in and letting it kind of register, and almost as if you're allowing it to be felt in a deep way and known in a deep way, as if it's a valuable thing. Everything's allowed to be there. And they have this idea in Zen, which was very important for me, of the suchness of experience, the thusness of experience. Each thing is in its own suchness can exist. And the suchness, how I understood this was kind of how it, whatever is being experienced, how it's experienced before the judgments, before the ideas of being for or against it, before all the kind of what clearly can be seen as the mind's kind of response, reactions, ideas about it. Just the experience in its own pristine simplicity. So this can be done with something like thinking. So rather than thinking that thinking is bad, that thinking is the problem, because thinking is what is the reaction to things, thinking is what doesn't allow things to be in their pristine suchness. Rather than kind of having that attitude towards thinking, it's rather this wonderful thing of turning the attention 180 degrees around. And when there's thinking is a really strong or predominant, to really be mindful of thinking. And in a sense, the pristine suchness of thinking. And have you ever thought about have you ever considered what a thought is? Have you ever kind of held a thought in your hand, palm of your hand, to feel its weight? Or have you ever tried to touch a thought and see, how flexible is it? How pliant is it? Can you push it and it gives, or is it hard? Or do you go right through it with your thought? Have you ever considered what color your thoughts are, or how large they are, how small they are? For some of us, when we have these kinds of thoughts, the whole relationship to thinking begins to shift, because a lot of the substance of thinking has to do with our involvement with it, our desperation or our anger or desires or intensity around how we think. And carrying the burden of the world on our shoulders has a lot to do with our relationship to thinking, how intensely we're involved in all these thoughts and ideas. And this question, how much is thinking away, is one of the ways for some of us to shift back out of being so glued and glommed onto thinking that, we're carrying it so heavily, or it's claustrophobic in our minds because of it all. And then start creating space. And a very common experience for people as they meditate, if they're able to get settled, is the thinking mind doesn't necessarily go away, but it stops being one thought after another, or the thoughts stop feeling so heavy or so dense, so compelling, and they get lighter and lighter and thinner and softer, and they can be just as profound as before. But there's all this extra way in which we infuse them with weight, infuse them with intensity, begins to quiet down. So if we turn attention around to really look at thinking, to be present for thought, just the way we be present for thinking, with a light touch, with a, you know, just seeing it for what it is, part of what we're also looking at is the way that we relate to thinking. What is our involvement with thoughts? And the pristine suchness of seeing our involvement. It's very easy to say, well, now it's okay, I learned, I don't have to get rid of my thoughts, they're not my enemy, but I'm not supposed to be so attached to them or so involved in them. And then now I'm a bad meditator. In Vipassana practice, and in Zen practice, I believe, there's no such thing as a bad meditator. It's just one more thing to experience in its pristine simplicity. Oh, this is me chasing my thoughts. This is me kind of contracting around this set of thoughts. This is me being so interested in this particular concern. Oh, this is what it is. This is what it is. And then as we do Vipassana practice, we learn more and more this seamless whole where we bring this quiet, light touch presence to anything that is happening, anything that's compelling in the moment. And with time, we get a sense that because the attention now, the awareness now is inclusive, that nothing is left out, it becomes sacred. Or the world becomes sacred. Because the awareness and the world are not exactly two different things. We have an awareness which has a sense that includes everything, not actively in the moment, but it's ready to include everything. As soon as awareness has something that's outside of what's acceptable for awareness, what we're not supposed to pay attention to, then this my sense of this sacredness disappears. But when there's no outside and everything is included, if there's no outside, then maybe there's no inside either. It's just this seamless whole that we're able to sit in, not being bothered by anything, but ready to respect and care for everything. So may you, in these next 24 hours, may it be interesting for you to look at your relationship to thinking and consider, is there some way, a wiser way to relate to thinking? Is there a useful vantage point in which to experience and know that you're thinking, that kind of suggests to you something about the sacred dimension of this world that comes through the medium of being aware. So thank you all very much.